Welcome to the Nerdcast Interviews, episode 17. Today I went to Narrow Gauge Brewery in Florissant, Missouri, and talked to Jeff, the head brewer there and owner of the brewery. We talked beer, how he got into brewing, the popularity of Narrow Gauge since they've been open, and plans going forward. So, Jeff, how did you get into brewing?
That's kind of a good question. I think it was more of the science behind it. So I started reading about fermentation and everything involved with fermentation. It just kind of consumed my time as far as the interest of researching that and seeing how beer is actually made. So whenever I first made a batch at home, it was very much just the science behind everything, and pretty much got consumed by it.
Yeah, so you started out as a big home brewer.
Yeah, so I did a few extract batches, and right away wanted more out of it, so jumped to all grain. I think my third or fourth batch in was an all grain batch.
A little more brave than I am. I've only done extract, so...
Yeah, it's one of those things where once you start learning all the different things that yeast can impart and malts can impart, it's just kind of one of those things where extract, you can get a lot out of it, but you definitely can get more out of going all grain.
Yeah. So did you enter competitions? And
yeah, I entered for maybe about a year. I entered a fair amount, and after about a year of it, I really didn't see getting much out of it anymore.
Yeah.
If I were to get, say, a 40 on a beer, I always wanted to know what it would take to get to a 50.
Yeah.
But you really don't get that feedback a lot of the time, so I just kind of started more relying on my friends and whatnot to try beers and tell me what they thought.
So did you join one of the local homebrew clubs?
Yeah, I was part of, or I still consider myself part of the STL Ops homebrew club. So,
okay.
I think I missed the very first meeting they had, and I've been a member since the second one. So it was kind of the first time I branched out.
Yeah.
And basically went to a setting where I didn't know anybody and had people try my beers. So it was definitely kind of nerve-wracking leading into it, but definitely paid off. There's a lot of great guys in the homebrew club and a lot of real skillful brewers, and you're going to learn a lot going to homebrew clubs.
I've been thinking about joining one, but I really don't brew enough. Yeah. I brewed two batches over our Christmas break, and then
Okay. That's
been pretty much all I've done the last year and a half.
Yeah, we'll have guys come in that are kind of like that at STL Hops, and they'll bring beer when they can or bring a couple commercial examples or something. So
yeah,
you'll still get something out of it, but it's definitely best to bring your own and get some honest feedback from some people. So
yeah, so you were so into it that you decided to open Narrow Gauge?
Yeah, so my wife and I were kind of trying to plan a way to open a brewery somewhere more in rural Missouri areas. So we initially put a business plan together for basically a steel frame pop-up building. Would have been on a concrete slab and heavily relied on distribution.
Yeah.
And we kind of learned quick it was going to be real tough to get anybody to loan us any type of money with no experience. So I ran into Ben and Dave at a festival, one of the STL Hops anniversary parties, and they had my beer there, and I knew Ben a little bit before then. So he made the comment to me that they were thinking about pushing forward within the Caginos into maybe brewing or some other type of venture. So that's kind of what initially started the conversations that Ben, Dave, and I had had.
So then you set up in the basement, correct?
Yeah, so our original conversations were, where are we going to do it in a different location? And we kind of, upon trying to pull together money and whatnot to open it, we realized it was best off to use the existing space. They had a banquet room that they didn't frequently use. Maybe once a month it was booked out, and that's the area that we converted into the brewing space.
Okay. And so, I mean, you were pretty popular right off the bat.
Yeah, it's been pretty mind-blowing the way things have taken off the way that they did. It's definitely not what we expected. We bought our second round of fermenters, I think a month and a half after we put our beers first on, because we kind of saw the writing on the wall where we'd have one beer, maybe three beers at a time. Occasionally we ran out, so and things we figured were only going to continue to grow, being we were so new. So we got the four new fermenters in November, and that's helped us keep more beers on, but lately we're kind of still in the situation of jumping between, instead of having one to three, we're jumping from three to nine instead.
So yeah,
there are points where we have a low amount of beer, and we're trying to decide how to push forward from there. We do have some additional space to put another four fermenters in, so we're kind of close to buying that equipment.
Yeah. So how many barrels are you producing then?
So I produce six barrels at a time. Well, technically, I guess three. I double brew to fill six barrel fermenters.
Okay.
So with the additional equipment, part of that is upgrading our brew house to six barrels. So instead of filling one fermenter a day, I'll be filling two.
Yeah.
So that'll definitely help with putting beers out there.
And so I've noticed with a lot of your beers, they're hoppier, more of the pale ale, IPA. Is that your favorite style?
Yeah. I guess I would say it's my favorite. Lambics are probably my actual favorite, but they're not as easy to find one. So I have a pretty good amount of them at home that I share with the wife sometimes. Sometimes I may drink it on my own or share with somebody. So that's probably my favorite style, just because I don't get it as much.
Yeah. Is that something you're considering doing here?
Yeah, I kind of kicked off a wild program. I guess it was either late January or early February. I filled some wine barrels, one with a table beer. So it's kind of like a Saison base with a couple different Brett strains in it. So they're more of the delicate Bretts and more fruity. So I expect to have a nice sessionable Brett beer that comes out of those. But only time will tell with those.
Yeah. So how long are you going to let those sit for?
Those I'm betting are going to be a 3 to 6 month beer. So I'll start pulling samples in maybe another month or so.
Yeah.
I'd know right now I could drill a hole in there and then I'll want to sample it every day. And
yeah,
it's kind of one of those things where you'll get impatient about it. But for the most part, I'm pretty patient brewer. I got enough going on where I can kind of put that in the back of my mind and not be too crazy about pulling samples all the time.
Yeah. So are you going to expand outside of the wine barrels? And?
So I filled more wine barrels as well with like a lambic-inspired beer. So within that beer was some commercial strains as well as some actual florescent yeast that I harvested out at my house. Last year I did 100% spontaneous beer, and that's what the yeast came out of. So I still had, I think, 9 carboys at home full of wild ales or some variation of that, and I did a 3-year blend, so like a goose type beer. So I did a 3-year blend, so a 1, 2, and 3-year, and my 1-year portion of it was at 100% spontaneous.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to try and use that yeast for some of our projects up here. So I have an additional 4 wine barrels that I'm planning to do a more of a rustic type Saison. So
okay.
I'll put some clean Saison yeast in it and then some of that 100% spontaneous florescent yeast. So theoretically, it should be a beer like nowhere else has, because I don't think anybody else has harvested any fluorescent yeast. So.
Probably not.
No.
That's very interesting. Is that one of your favorite things to do, just kind of experiment and see what you can do?
Yeah, definitely, especially with the wild beers. And I think that's why I enjoy them so much, is they're less predictable, so you don't really always know what you're going to get out of them.
And so you do those at home first just to make sure you're not...
They take a long time. So for the very beginning of a year, it was focusing on keeping up with the IPAs and the porters that we do put on. Kind of go from there. And the beginning of the year is when we started getting some barrels in here. So I have 7 bourbon barrels as well that are filled with an Imperial Stout base. So what I'll do with those, I really don't know right yet, so I'm gonna sample the barrels as time goes on and kind of figure out what I want to do. It may just be a barrel aged stout, it may be a barrel aged Zavtrak. I don't really know what I'll do at this point.
Yeah, well, if you need someone to help taste them, let me know. So where did the name Narrow Gauge come from?
So it actually ties back to the city of Florissant. In the late 1800s, there was the West End Narrow Gauge Railroad that extended. I think at that point it was Wellston. It stopped and they extended it out to Florissant. So it ran from essentially downtown St. Louis to Florissant. So from my understanding, it was a lot of the French settlers that started in Florissant would go to St. Louis during the weeks to go about their actual work, and then they would come up here, and whether it was they had some farmland up here or they just kind of had their vacation houses up here, they'd there was kind of a more the railroad itself was a passenger commute railroad, not really used for anything else, I don't believe.
So it's nice that it ties back to the Florissant history then.
Yeah, so we wanted to have something to tie into the city without being just Florissant Brewing Company, because you never really know what's going to happen. You move somewhere else and now you carry that name with you and you're not necessarily in that city anymore.
Yeah, kind of like O'Fallon.
Yeah, so they're, with them being in Maryland Heights, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure it weighs some confusion on people, but they've been around long enough to where enough people probably realize what went on there.
Yeah. So I know you do a lot of crowlers and growler fills.
Definitely.
Is that the biggest thing you do?
As far as...
As sales?
Yeah, so we probably see 40 to 50% of the beer that goes through the taps goes through to-go packaging.
Okay.
Some beers are higher, some beers are lower, so... a beer like OJ Run typically is probably 60 to 70% of that goes out the door in crowlers or growlers.
Yeah, I would have to say that was probably my favorite beer that I tasted for the first time last year. I just drew a blank all of a sudden. So, Hoppy Meal.
Yep.
I heard about how the name came about. You want to explain that?
Sure. That kind of came up. We had a customer come in. They brought in a Happy Meal and didn't realize we had a kids menu. And I guess kind of got a little frustrated about it. Left us some bad reviews on Facebook. So I reached out to them trying to make things right with them. Because you never really know what went on. Maybe something wasn't relayed to them the best. And didn't really respond to me. Another profile came on that was a fake profile, left another bad review, so it kind of like tumbled. He posted in one of the bigger beer groups on Facebook, STL Area Beer Enthusiasts, and it kind of ensued just a downhill spiral of everybody backing us, which is crazy because we weren't open very long at that point in time. So the community jumping behind us on that was kind of eye-opening. I was actually out of the country when all that happened, so I really didn't see any of it.
Yeah.
By the time it came to my knowledge, it was already all deleted and nothing was there for me to read, so I didn't get to see everything. I just handled the Facebook reviews that were left from this individual.
Yeah, that's where I saw it. It was on that Facebook group. And
yeah, so I mean... it's not to like poke fun directly at the guy. It's just kind of a humorous thing that some of the people in the community know. I understand people get frustrated sometimes and maybe do something they didn't really think through, and we all do that. It's human nature.
So. Yeah. So outside of that review, I mean, it's been pretty positive with everyone.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're going to occasionally have someone that has a bad experience. Not everyone can have a 100% awesome five-star experience. So we try to make things right if somebody has some sort of issue.
Yeah.
But like I said, you can't really please everybody.
So as far as quality, then, what do you do for your quality review? I mean, do you sample everything before it even comes out?
Yeah, so I'll sample everything multiple times. So I'll try the beers throughout the process. So before fermentation, at the end of a brew day, I'll pulse them out, try it prior to even putting yeast in,
yeah,
just make sure everything tastes all right, and then throughout the stages. So I'll try it a few times throughout fermentation. Towards the end of it, before I dry hop, I'll try it then as well. Also pull gravity samples, all sorts of things throughout the actual process.
Yeah. And so have you run into many bad batches since you've been here?
No, nothing that I consider bad. So we've not, not had to dump anything, but anytime you're doing a new beer, you don't really know what's going to come of it. So.
Yeah.
Especially with some of the different series we do, like the O series, where just experimental dry hop, you really never know what you're going to get out of it. Of course, I've had some of those batches that I thought were better than others, but nothing that was not servable.
Yeah.
But I mean, if something had some sort of off flavor that I detect, it's one of those things where either the fermentation will clean it up or it won't. And if it doesn't, that's not going to be a beer that goes through our taps.
Yeah.
It'd be a painful thing to dump it down the drain, but I'd rather do that than serve a bad product.
Yeah. But I mean, it said something that you've gotten so much quality already in the process. It's hard for a lot of breweries to do that.
Yeah. And it's, even with the small batches, it's kind of hard. So as time has gone on, I've bought additional equipment to help me be as consistent as I can be. Like a flow meter where I can measure the exact amount of water that I'm putting into the mash tun when I'm mashing in. So every mash has the same amount of mash thickness, so you're going to essentially create the same exact wort every time. Whereas before, I would measure off the sight glass, and it was kind of not 100% accurate way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably within 5% of the same thing every time, but you're naturally going to have somewhat of a different tasting beer.
Yeah.
Whether it's perceivable to people is questionable, but the main thing you want to do as a brewer is try and make as consistent batches as possible.
Yeah. So what is an average day for you then here?
So I have a couple different types of days. So my brew days are my longer days than any. Whereas when I first started brewing, they were at least 12-hour days. I think my first brew day was 16 hours. And that was more because I didn't overlap a lot of things, just because I didn't know what the efficiencies were going to be.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to mash in for the second time, and maybe I didn't hit the pH that I wanted to hit, or I didn't hit the gravity that I wanted, so that made for a long day there. But I've slowly worked it down to about a 9-hour brew day to double batch and fill a fermenter. So for a long time, it was 12 hours consistent.
Yeah.
Every day was in 12 hours and out. So lately I've been just trying to figure out ways to make dual use of my time. So a lot of the times when I'm brewing, I'll do cellar work as well.
Yeah.
My off days where I'm not brewing, that's typically what I'm doing, cellar work. So whether it's kegging beers, dry hopping beers, transferring beers, cleaning kegs, things like that.
Yeah. It's a lot of time to put into it. But if it's something you love, I mean, why not do it?
Definitely, it's. I mean, it's definitely work, but I don't view it as work.
Yeah.
Thing. So, then it's a good workout. So
yeah.
Instead of sitting at a desk all day, which I never really did that anyways, but I definitely get more of a workout every day than I did prior to being here.
Yeah. So are you here full time now?
Yeah, so I transferred to full-time here about mid-October.
Okay.
And continued to work part-time at my old job through up until early December.
Okay. So I see shirts hanging over there. Are you getting more into merchandising then since the beer's taking off?
We try to keep as much as we can on hand, but it's kind of difficult. You never know really what you're going to sell. And we try and keep something of every size in, so if somebody's wanting to purchase something, they can.
Yeah. So I've also seen you guys popping up on more national recognition.
Yep.
Have they reached out to you for interviews? Have they talked to you? Or?
Yeah, I've had a few places reach out. So the USA Today poll that just went on, they initially reached out to me requesting photos, things like that.
And yeah.
Kind of told us we were going to be part of their top 10. They didn't really explain that it was a competition, so whenever that came out, it was kind of mind-blowing. I didn't realize it was going to be for 3 years back, so it was a competition of 20 breweries that they selected for the best 10 breweries to open in the last 3 years. So even to be part of that list is awesome.
Yeah.
We could finish 20 out of 20, and I'd be happy with that.
So, yeah.
We've had them reach out to us. Draft Magazine's reached out to us. Trying to think of anywhere. Beer Advocate.
Yeah.
And Rate Beer had their awards, which we got Best New Brewer in Missouri on. So that was crazy, and I found out from that on Twitter. Somebody tweeted it that was there, I guess. So,
yeah,
it was awesome to find out about it that way.
That's got
to
be mind blowing.
Yeah, it is every day. Anytime something like that comes up, it makes me wonder, how did these people hear about us, or how did we get on their radar to see that?
So, have you thought about going into canning or bottling?
Yeah, so with the amount of to-go stuff we fill, it's a pretty big time strain on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult, it's time-consuming, and you're not sending the best product out there. So we are looking at ways to get a small canning line and start canning is what we're hoping we'll be doing before the end of the year. But with that comes a lot of investment, so we're trying to do everything debt-free, so we're trying to just acquire the money as we go on and continue to evolve into the space that we're in.
Yeah, and so you would do canning over bottling?
Yeah, that's our preferred. That doesn't mean we may not be able to can. You can get bottlers cheaper, very labor intensive.
Yeah.
Ways of doing it, but it's one of those things where I think the customers would rather have cans, so it makes the most sense for us to try and go that route if we can.
Yeah, it's better quality. I mean, don't have to worry about the light coming through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially with the IPAs and all the big IPAs you see now are coming in 16-ounce cans. So,
yeah.
The Alchemist, Treehouse, Trillium just converted over probably maybe a year ago, a little bit less, into the can, 4-pack, 16-ounce can format.
Yeah. That's
ideally the route we want to go.
So when you do that, are you just going to focus on St. Louis area first and then expand out?
We hope to keep everything here. So really with the amount that we're making, we're not set up to be able to distribute. If we ever did, it's going to be a small amount to select accounts. And maybe it's once a month we send a keg out, and it's just more to try and take some of our beers to other parts of the city.
Because
a lot of people drive far to come out here, so that's another mind-blowing thing.
Yeah.
You got people driving from South St. Louis to up to get a couple beers.
Yeah. O'Fallon. Yeah. Done it a few times. Yeah.
So it's hard to say. We don't really know how things will go. So if it turns out where it's more feasible for us to send cans to stores around town, that's something we may do. But ideally, we want to try and move everything through here if we can.
Yeah. Awesome. So just one last thing. So you said lambics are more your style. What is your go-to beer?
If I'm going for lambic, probably my favorite lambic is a fresh Fofoon from Canteon, just because the apricot in it just pops so awesomely as a fresh beer. Definitely not one that ages very well. I've had aged versions of it, and I definitely prefer fresh. But it's a tough one to get. So if I were going to go with anything, it would probably be Oud Goose from Drury, just because it's relatively easy to get and probably the best goose on the market.
So then best local beer that you'd pick up in a pinch?
If I'm picking up something at the store, it's generally 4-Ann. So whether it's Citywide or Incarnation or Divided Sky, just kind of get a different type of IPA.
Yeah.
If I'm going draft, it's generally Civil Life beers. So I'll grab one of their porters or American Brown, just because it's nice to have a well executed example of those English beers like that.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, I know you're busy today, so I'll let you get back to work. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, no problem.
All right.
So Narrow Gauge is going to have some good stuff coming out in the near future. So keep an eye on their website, which is narrowgaugestl.com. If you go on there, you can find out what they have on tap, where they're at on levels of everything they've got, and if they're doing crawlers or not. You could also find them on Twitter at narrowgaugebeer. You can find us at our website. It's nerdcast.com, NYRDCAST. You can also find us on social media at Nerdcast. Again, NYRDCAST on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Look it up. You'll find us. So the music this week, since today is 314 St. Louis Day, here is Some Urge.
Possible.